Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. On this episode, I'm really excited to have Philip Wegman from the Luxury Collection, a member of the Marriott Luxury portfolio of hotels. They've got 115 of the most incredible hotels across, I think, 35 different countries and another 25 on the way over the next 5 years. Philip, thanks for doing this.
Absolute pleasure. Great to be here, Jess.
So, you know, with the Marriott Luxury Collection, and this portfolio of luxury brands, you know, Regis and Ritz being the largest in the world, how do you describe the Luxury Collection amongst, you know, the Ritz and Regis and all these others?
Yeah, sure. So as probably many listeners know, Marriott acquired Starwood Hotels in 2016, I believe. And with that, that acquisition became the biggest hotel company in the world, and also inherited lots of great luxury brands, right? So all of a sudden, there was not just Ritz-Carlton, which had already been acquired by Marriott, and an addition which Marriott had launched with Ian Schrager. All of a sudden, we had St. Regis, we had W Hotels, and we had my brand, the Luxury Collection, right? So all together, it's now, across our 8 luxury brands, it's now 500 open hotels with about 250 signed deals in the pipeline. And Luxury Collection is, as you said, 115 hotels that are open and about 25 deals that are signed and will open over the next few years, including at least 10 this year. So this year is a huge year for the brand. We're opening probably a hotel every month, literally starting in just a few weeks in Istanbul. And the place of Luxury Collection within the Marriott luxury portfolio is really that of it's the home for all the truly unique, very independent feeling luxury properties that Marriott has and continues to attract and bring in, right? So every hotel is one of a kind and unique and very, very different, obviously tied together through a number of brand standards and service consistencies, if you will, but very, very different hotels, from the architecture to the interior design to the food and beverage offering to the programming. They're all unique, right? And that is sort of its place within the portfolio.
Yeah. So when were you officially allowed to start talking about the Bellagio?
So we announced this in Q4 of last year. Our two CEOs jointly made a statement and went public. And that was really the very first day we were allowed to talk about it. Obviously, behind the scenes, it was hundreds of people that were involved on their end and on our end, because it is a massive partnership involving thousands of hotel rooms in the Las Vegas market and really driving incredible new experiences and value for the loyalty program members of both brands, of both companies, right? On the MGM side, those members will have a lot more choice to redeem their points. And on the Marriott side, it's obviously now full access to the Las Vegas market and just so much choice for them.
Yeah. What are some of the other more famous hotels across these 35 countries in the Luxury Collection?
Yeah, so you mentioned Bellagio, right, which is coming into the brand officially in just a few weeks, going live in just a few weeks in the system, so people can then actually book it also as a Luxury Collection hotel. It's obviously open and operating right now. And in the U.S., the Palace Hotel in San Francisco is very iconic. The Phoenician in Scottsdale is probably one of our more iconic resorts here in the U.S. When you go over to Europe, which is where Luxury Collection started over 100 years ago in Venice, Italy, we still have many of the most iconic hotels on the continent. We have the Gritti Palace in Venice, which is absolutely incredible. We have the Prince de Galles in Paris, which is one of the iconic Parisian grand hotels. And then there are the Grand Bretagne in Athens, the Alfonso XIII in Seville, and many, many incredible hotels all over Europe. So Europe is a stronghold for the brand. And the ones that we're opening this year are just incredible. The Königshof in Munich, which is an iconic hotel in Germany, was torn down completely and will be rebuilt as a luxury collection hotel, opening in June this year. And so the list continues. Over in Asia, I was just there a few weeks ago. We have an incredible portfolio in Japan. And the Mitsui in Kyoto is probably one to call out, just a spectacular hotel and representation of the city of Kyoto. And I could tell you about 20 others that are really iconic, but I maybe leave it here for now.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons that I had the team reach out and seek you out specifically is my fascination with one of a kind, specifically in hospitality and resorts and experiences. There's such a marketing value to me. This idea of like, hey, if your significant other wants this photo for their Instagram, there's one place in the world to get it, you know? And this idea of like experience and novelty to me is such a huge magnet personally. But from a finance and investment standpoint, I mean, my heroes, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger and people who follow them like Bruce Flatt and Howard Marks at Oak Tree Capital, this idea of like, I don't know, there's this European billionaire, well, born in the UK, spends a lot of time in Portugal, named Richard Koch, wrote the 80-20 principle.
Yeah.
And he sums up this incredible value of being different but valuable. And, you know, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger are always talking about like the value of an unregulated monopoly, or a, you know, having a big moat and high walls around your castle with a knight with integrity guarding the gates, right? And this idea of like, there are so often times that the feeling of going to a hotel can start to feel commoditized. I was listening to the great marketer Seth Godin talking to a group in Denmark at the Nordic Forum, saying, "Hey, I turn down the room, the lights in this hotel. Can you tell if I'm in a Hyatt or a Hilton, or do you have any idea what kind of hotel I'm in?" And you couldn't, right? And but this idea of something truly special, something to go home and tell people about, something to feel like I actually did something, instead of, you know, like how sick are most of us of fast food? Because even though we try to avoid it, we still have to have it when you're in a rush here or there, or in an airport or something, right? And I know that you're design obsessed. And I think that's another reason I wanted you on the show so much, is like, you've got so much business acumen, so much sector expertise, but you're so design obsessed and such a true believer of the one of a kind experience. Can you tell me where this comes from and your opinions about it?
Yeah, no, there's a lot in there, what you just shared. So obviously, traveling really is social currency. Traveling, dining out, it's really become social currency, right? And you can travel to the most incredible places in the world and stay in a you know, boring cookie cutter hotel, and that's still how many people go about it. But certainly in the luxury space, and even in some of the other lower segments, I think for many years now, it's changed. And where you stay and the restaurants you frequent, it's all part of the destination experience, right? And experiencing the destination in a deeper, more meaningful way. And it's social currency too. It's your bragging rights, right? The places you visited, the hotel that you stayed at. In the past, maybe you only had to stay at a super fancy hotel because you were doing an important business meeting there. Now, also leisure stays for sure, I think, are very much all about that hotel experience. And you do spend quite a few hours of your stay there. Even when you're visiting the super interesting city, you're still going to be spending quite a few hours in the hotel. And maybe the hotel becomes your refuge while you're relaxing from the buzz of the city, you know, after you've taken in all of that that the destination has to offer. So so I think that's the sort of the first point, right? The second point is there's definitely still a lot of value in hotels being very consistent, right? And hotel brands being very, very consistent. I mean, obviously Marriott, Hilton, and many other chains have built a whole incredible business model around that. And many of these brands are still very, very successful and very valuable because that consistency still is very compelling, right? And people love it in most price segments. In the luxury space, a lot of the guest's expectation really has shifted towards that. I don't want to, you know, every trip has to be unique. I rarely repeat destinations, and I also want the hotel experience to be different every single time, right? By the way, there's always competing trends, right? The fact that Luxury Collection is thriving doesn't mean that Ritz-Carlton is not, right? Ritz-Carlton is an extremely successful brand. We have a lot of demand for it, and people love that Ritz-Carlton experience, which is a little bit more scripted maybe than your Luxury Collection experience, where every hotel is, you know, has more flexibility and is more different from one to the next. But I do think that's pretty much you know, where the market has gone. Consumers, travelers are really looking for these experiences, and the hotel plays a big role. And if you select your hotel carefully, and you pick a hotel that's deeply rooted in the destination, then just by staying there, you are already well on your way to discovering the destination, right? If you're staying at some non-bespoke hotel somewhere in the outskirts near the convention center, then you're obviously not plugged into the heart of the destination just yet, and you will have to work a little bit harder to experience the destination, right? A really great hotel, and certainly a really great Luxury Collection hotel, will help you and enable you to just very organically, very naturally experience the best that the destination has to offer.
You know, I think about, the hotel that is high on consistency but low on experience that's near the convention center. And like, I can see the place for that. Like, there's certainly business trips that I'm on. I'm like, hey, so you need a place to stay, and I don't want to guess what it's going to be like there. I literally just need a place to sleep in between all the stuff I'm doing. And I see those things. But to me, this idea of experience over stuff, I mean, people have been commenting on this for 15 years, but like this trend just doesn't seem to be going away, of more and more interest in experience and creating memories instead of just owning stuff all the time. And I think is so magic about what you've done is this idea of the consistency of a hotel brand being associated with Marriott, being able to access worldwide travelers and give this feeling that this is a part of something, and they've got this element of consistency while still creating this like monopoly of like, this hotel, there is one of one and we own it. And if you want this experience, there's only one place to get it. Where like, you it's like, I don't know what the ratio is, 80-20, 90-10, something of a like, enough consistency for comfort and enough novelty to be just an absolutely huge magnet. And again, back to design, like beautiful, like it almost being like an artistic experience to be there. I love going to art galleries and museums. It's kind of like my business travel in different countries across the world. Like, even though I do like back-to-back meetings to get the most of it, my like indulgence was, I'm going to go to whatever the biggest art gallery or the biggest museum is in this country or in this city. That was my thing. And like, I mean, just flipping through the Instagram of the Luxury Collection, it's like art. It's like artwork. Yeah. Any thoughts there?
No, quite right. I think you just summed up the value proposition of the Luxury Collection, right? And that's why we have really healthy demand for the brand, fortunately. We have a lot of great owners and developers out there wanting to do Luxury Collection hotels with us, or taking existing properties that are really quite unique and interesting, and they bring them over from whatever brand they currently are with to join our Luxury Collection brand. And the value proposition is exactly that. It's that blend of really solid, robust, Marriott, infused brand standards, because that's obviously where Marriott and some of the other chains are just so good at. But then coupled with a very, very unique identity. And every hotel that joins the Luxury Collection actually has to go through this very robust positioning work, because you're not plugging into a brand that's already there and you're just basically following, you know, the visual ID of that master brand, and you're just opening number 214 under that brand, and it pretty much feels roughly the same as all the others. You're creating a completely new brand, and there will probably only be that one hotel, your hotel, in that brand under the umbrella brand Luxury Collection. And so there has to be this positioning work. Somebody has to come up, not just with the name is almost the easiest part, but with the story. What's the story, right? How is this hotel connected to the destination? What's really the big story around it? And then hopefully that narrative informs everything else, from the way food and beverage and spa and wellness are being imagined in that hotel, to the way the hotel is being designed. Ideally, the positioning work happens first, and then the interior design sort of comes in and supports that, versus an interior designer putting together a beautiful hotel, and then you're trying to sort of invent the story after the fact when the hotel is already built physically, right? So ideally, you really come up with a narrative first, and then you do the maybe you don't build the hotel, maybe the hotel is already there, but you do the interior design, and you create spaces that all ladder up to this one strong narrative and positioning statement of the hotel. And then when you're in those hotels as a guest, it all feels very coherent, right? It feels sort of like everything makes sense. You sort of flow through the hotel from check-in to check-out, and you spend time in different spaces, and you go to the restaurant, you go to the spa, you spend time in your room, but everything sort of makes sense because there's this consistent language, and that's, you know, brought to life through great design, and all these little touch points that are all telling you a very natural story. And then many times somebody checks out and tells their friends about the last hotel that they stayed in, and they say, I just loved it. And sometimes you ask them, so what did you love about it? And sometimes people can't even tell you specifically what it was, but it is that's the secret sauce, right? That's when we get it right, when guests feel that way when they leave the hotel.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to stay at a couple of really fancy places in China and in Japan. And it was like, those were for sure the fanciest hotels I'd ever stayed at. And it was like, I stayed at nice hotels, but this was like on another level. And it was almost not in the same category.
Asia is special. I mean, most people will probably agree with that. Asia is just special for many, many reasons. But to pick out a few, I mean, obviously, mostly, certainly in the luxury space, but in all other segments as well, the way the hotels are staffed is just very different from Europe and the US. So you just get this incredible service. A lot of their cultures are just incredibly service-minded, and hospitality is sort of comes natural to them, right? When you're in Thailand, it's just always an absolute pleasure to be there and experience hospitality. And then food and beverage is just at a different level, because in Asia, it's just appreciated at a different level. And so it's just very hard to find that same choice and sort of quality in abundance the way you find it in a hotel in Asia. You walk into, you know, breakfast buffets in Asia and you're like, my God, I'm not even staying at a luxury hotel. I'm just staying at a premium hotel, you know, 4-star rated, and it is the best breakfast buffet I've ever seen in my life.
It's so funny that you brought that up. I was going to say, I have definitely come home and talked to my teenagers about this, like, such a huge breakfast buffet. And then there's an equally large one of foods I've never heard of. Like, it's funny at those places in Asia. I like so many trips to the buffet, because I like to go down, you know, it's kind of more of like a Western side and an Asian side of foods, right? And I like to go down to the Asian side and get a little bit of every single thing and figure out which ones were good, and then go back and get some more of those and then pepper in some of the Western foods. But it's like, that's like an experience they should be charging for, to like, it's like being on like a, I don't know, a food safari, just the breakfast buffet.
Agreed. Food and beverage is just, yeah, not to be underestimated these days. So it's hard to overstate the importance of food and beverage these days, right? In hotels. There was a time when people really didn't care so much about it and didn't go to restaurants in hotels, but now in the luxury segment and also in some of the other segments, it's just incredibly important. And many of our hotels, it drives a significant percentage of the revenue. You know, it could be 30, 40, 50, could be over 50% of the total revenue of the hotel coming from food and beverage and banqueting, catering, so running events, which usually have a lot of food and beverage involved. And so you're really thinking about that is something we spend a lot of time on. And obviously it's sometimes us ourselves coming up with the concepts and operating the outlets. And then in many cases, it's just bringing in the right partners, right? Which is not easy, but when you find the right partners, it can be incredibly successful. And so we have a whole department dedicated to just those third party relationships with the great restaurants of the world, you know, from Zuma to Nobu and so forth.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said earlier. I really liked the context that you talked about design in terms of its relationship to positioning and to the narrative of like, what is the story of this property? As you think about design, as you think about selecting interior designers, what do you see some of the rookie mistakes out there happen as people who are, they're trying to be great, but they just miss the mark?
Yeah. So first of all, there's, of course, I'm not a designer, but I do spend a lot of time with our internal design team and also with a lot of the designers that work on our hotels, right? And there's lots of great designers out there. That doesn't necessarily mean they will be able to do a great hotel that is a great experience for the guests. And I think that's sort of what you're hinting at. So a lot of our approved and recommended design studio partners are companies that have done work in the hotel space and really understand that it's about an unbelievable and for some of our brands very bold vision for the design aesthetics, but at the same time it's also about the guest experience and the functionality of the spaces, right? And the guest room in particular. And so that for starters, right? In the luxury collection, we think about it a little bit differently. We also work with some of the big firms, and several of our hotels have been done by incredible, very, very famous globally known interior designers and globally known firms.
And which ones are some of the top ones there?
So the Mitsui, where I was just a few weeks ago, and I mentioned earlier in Kyoto, that was Andre Fu Studio, which is obviously incredible. Las Alcobas in Mexico City was done by Jabu Puschelberg, and the list goes on. But probably as you go through the portfolio, there's a good percentage of hotels that have been done by some of these really great firms, Avroco, Rockwell, etc. But then with luxury collection, in some markets, it really also makes sense to have a very good local designer who's local to that market, who's maybe not as well known internationally, but who really knows their craft, obviously does things in an elevated way, but brings that local touch and design narrative forward in ways that maybe the international firms would struggle to do because they're just not from that location, right? We have a new hotel coming in Santo Domingo, in the capital of Dominican Republic. And the hotel's already there. It's old houses that sort of jointly make up this absolutely beautiful hotel, old casitas. And the designer who has worked on the project and will also work on the expansion for us and on the conversion to luxury collection, she's from there. She's from the capital, and she will do something that feels 100% Santo Domingo. And you will not have that problem when you switch off the light at night. Not knowing where you are in the world, right? You will know that you are, because the impressions were so strong as you walked into that hotel room and what you took in visually will have been so strong you will remember.
Yeah, that's great. Why do you think that so many in finance and leadership have taken so long to recognize the value of superior design?
It's a good question. I'm not exactly sure. I'm from Europe. I've spent most of my adult life living in Barcelona. In that particular, you know, market and environment, design has always been important. Has always been. It's like, you know, it's like living in Milan, right? It's not like the importance of design is something new. In other places, I think you're right. I think design has maybe played less of a role. And now in our industry, it's just table stakes. In the luxury space, it's table stakes. But even in the lower tiers, right? As you go into the 4-star or even 3-star segment, for lack of a better way of defining it, right? Design is so important. And we launched a whole new brand centered around the idea of really great design called Moxie. And I've stayed in a few of them, and I absolutely love it. It's not luxury. It's actually a very basic service offering in terms of how big the rooms are and the facilities of the hotel. But the design is just fantastic. Yabo Pushberg actually did it. And it is just incredible what they've done with these very, very small rooms and how good it feels to be in one of them. And then AC Hotels, right? Marriott acquired AC Hotels. AC Hotels is a Spanish brand, actually. And their design aesthetic was very distinct from everything that was out there in that segment. So Marriott saw that opportunity, acquired the brand, and has now grown it from, I don't know, 80 or 90 hotels when they acquired it 10 years ago to well over 200. And it's because design has become more important, and big companies like us, like Marriott, made the right bet and decided to invest in brands that have good design in their DNA, right? Versus ignoring the importance of it.
Yeah. When you think about the luxury and ultra luxury hotel space, what do you see as changes in the next couple of years or in the near term? Where are the trends headed?
When you look at all of the data, so they're obviously different experiences and different price points, and therefore also different travelers, right? Ultra luxury really is a much smaller group of ultra high net worth individuals. The ones that really stay in ultra luxury on a regular basis. You know, we're not talking about the occasional aspirational sort of trading up by somebody who stays in such a hotel maybe for their honeymoon. It's really the ones that stay in those types of hotels all year round. We have two brands that really operate in that space, right? We have Ritz-Carlton Reserve, which is sort of the extension of the Ritz-Carlton brand, a highly experiential brand, primarily present in resort, fairly remote, beautiful resort destinations. And then Bulgari Hotels is our other brand. Not our brand, but we operate all of the hotels. And those two operate in the ultra luxury space, and the price point is very, very elevated. So it's a different traveler, different customer. But when you look at all the data, the demand for these types of products is going to continue to grow. So I think the brands that are already there will continue to see new openings. We certainly have really nice pipeline for Bulgari and Ritz-Carlton Reserve, but there's also Aman, which just had another capital injection from another partner. So Aman and others will continue to grow, I think. So ultra luxury is not going away.
But what about within luxury? What do you see in luxury in the near term?
So luxury, I think, also when you look at the data and how much the affluent customer base is growing, you will see growth across the board, right? Us, all of our brands have incredibly healthy pipelines, but so do many of our competitors. And there's probably enough, there's enough cake for everybody, right? I think it's just such incredible demand that it's almost hard to keep up with the supply in some places, right? I think in addition to just hotels, the residential piece will continue to grow. Most of our luxury hotels, new projects that we're signing or that are breaking ground have a residential component to them. In the US and in some other markets, it's almost necessary to have that to actually finance the project. But in other markets, it's not, and it's just demand driven. There's just demand for it. People love some of these brands so much and love the fact that they can live in a great apartment unit or villa, but have access to all these hotel facilities, right? As if they were on vacation all year round, right? Well, great Ritz-Carlton Spa right next to me, you know, or the St. Regis Hotel adjacent to my, just a few floors down, you know, and all the facilities are there. So I think that will all continue to see growth. And then what will be interesting to see is the luxury lifestyle space. We are obviously already in it with Edition, which is a very successful brand. And then we're in it as well with W, which is further elevating its positioning and will continue to grow. So I think those are sort of the thoughts on luxury. There's enough demand for us and many other players to keep on growing. Is pretty much what sums it up.
Yeah. When you think about your 115 open hotels and like this big advantage of actually being special, of actually being one of a kind, but the disadvantage of word of mouth or reach, because you pick some brand which, you know, is maybe a more homogenous experience, and it's easier for people to have heard of that because they have just heard of the hotel, they've just heard of the chain, you know, like it's just the next one of pick your luxury brand, right? Where you obviously have the uphill battle of like, have they heard about your property? Like you probably have the advantage of once they've heard about your property, you've got an unfair advantage of like, oh wow, that's a one of a kind experience. That sounds special. That sounds intriguing. That sounds magnetic. But then to me, my guess is that you have to do more work to get them to hear about you in the first place. Is that a fair guess, or how would you say it differently?
That is spot on. I think it's both a huge competitive advantage, and then it's also a massive challenge, right? It's definitely great because luxury collection to the traveler, to the guest, many times doesn't feel like a brand or a chain. And that can be a huge advantage because there are people out there who just don't like chains, and even the greatest loyalty programs do not sway them. They don't want anything to do with it. They're so obsessed with the fact that every trip is something unique and individual, and the notion of staying in something that's operated or owned by a group or by a chain, it does not align with that, right? So we can really with this brand tap into those customers that have that kind of mindset. And a lot of the independents do that as well, right? They speak to those customers in a very compelling way. And I love the independents. I came from the independent world, right? From a large soft affiliation brand that had hundreds of hotels that really attracted those types of travelers. But then on the brand awareness side, it is a huge challenge because it could happen that people stay in one of our amazing hotels and they really only remember that they stayed at the Prince des Galles in Paris, but they don't necessarily know that it was part of something bigger, right? And so that's sort of the whole point of it, but it's also a challenge in terms of brand awareness. And so we do, from a marketing perspective, constantly try to tell a portfolio story through our marketing campaigns and through other little touches. Like every year we publish a beautiful book with Asseline in New York, and that book is basically our directory. It has all our hotels in there and this beautiful stories about them, and it goes into every hotel room, right? So when the guest picks that up, they will be gently educated that they are staying in something that is unique but part of a collection.
Yeah. So this customer segment that really wants something special. Maybe it's like it's something about their own identity or whatever, this idea of I'm not part of the unwashed masses who want a fast food steak, right? Whatever it is. What are some lessons you've learned over the years of attracting that individual and getting through to that individual, whether it's at your previous brands or here now?
Yeah, so a lot of those travelers, certainly the ones we want to attract for the luxury collection, but also in my previous world, you know, the way the independents go about their targeted marketing, a lot of these travelers are very sophisticated. They've been around, they've stayed in a lot of great hotels, so they cannot really be intrigued by a picture of a great king size bed and a great bathtub, right? Their homes also, because they're affluent travelers for the most part, right? Their homes look a lot nicer than what most of our hotel rooms look like. It's just the reality, right? Most people don't even have one home. They have vacation homes, and in those vacation homes, now there's also a bathtub right by the window looking over the mountain. So you can't just easily score points with that anymore. You still have to have some of those assets out there. But what really brings them in is the storytelling, right? So you mentioned our Luxury Collection Instagram account earlier. And essentially, when you see the account, there are some images of some incredible shots where you're just selling luxury and just, you know, a very elevated component of the stay. But a lot of it is actually videos and storytelling to tell people, hey, when you're in Abu Dhabi at Al Watba, our resort just outside Abu Dhabi in the desert, you're going to be learning about horses, Arabic horses, the way you would not be able to do in any other way, right? There's lots of places where you can do horseback riding, but we sort of bring them in with this very unique story where we're selling an experience, we're selling the opportunity to broaden their minds, to learn something new, to educate themselves, right? These are sophisticated, well-traveled people who have an appetite and a desire to learn new things and see new things. And that's sort of where we try to go in with our marketing.
That's great. It's interesting how many different forms of marketing there are, but besides being in person, video seems to evoke the most emotional response, in my observation. I don't know if you feel differently.
Yeah, no, video's great. Costly to produce, at least at the luxury level, right? We even do also sometimes feature content that's shot on the iPhone, but a lot of it is actually professionally produced with really great agency partners. And so it's not cheap to do, but the really great stories need to be captured very professionally, and then it's usually worth it. We just ran a campaign last year where we produced fairly long videos, actually, that ran well over 2 minutes, and we were a little worried about it going in because we were sort of thinking the trend goes towards just, you know, vignettes or 20-second clips. Because people's attention span is becoming shorter and shorter. But these videos actually had a really high, very nice view completion rate. And we were surprised by it, right? If the video starts off in such an intriguing way that you draw the person in, then you can maybe capture their attention and imagination for a little bit longer. And then obviously, from there to the actual sale, it's also not so difficult anymore.
Yeah, no kidding. What's another, by the way, what's the website if people want to be looking at all these hotels?
Luxurycollection.com, and the Instagram is Luxury Collection. This brand has been around for a long time. It started with Chiga Hotels in Italy, like well over 100 years ago, and it's been around as Luxury Collection since 1994. So it's been around 30 years, right? It's been around as a brand for decades, which is not something many other luxury hotel brands can say.
Yeah. You know, when you think about the financial returns available in the luxury world, certainly, you know, LVHM and Bernard Arnault and becoming the richest man in the world, you know, fluctuating stuff, has kind of like re-brought it to mind for a number of folks. What's another principle of success in luxury business, the business side of the luxury business?
Yeah, so obviously luxury hotels, many of our owners want to see returns, right? They're in the business for financial returns. In Marriott, we have lots of institutional owners, very sophisticated about it, but many of our other owners also want to see returns. And that needs to come through the operating performance of the hotel, of course, but also comes through the asset appreciation, right? And depending on the financial performance of the hotel's valuation is higher. So those are sort of the two ways to make your money with a luxury hotel. It takes a lot longer, typically, to extract the value and the returns from a luxury product, unless you're building something like the projects we talked about earlier. You're building a hotel, but there's also 100 residences and you sell 50 of them before you even open the hotel, right? Then obviously there's some cash coming in early in the game. But typically it takes longer, but then the returns can be impressive, right? Versus many other asset classes and also some other hotel segment classes where the returns are faster, but then not quite as impressive, and also the asset appreciation is not of the same caliber.
And it's interesting to think about. I know we're kind of winding down for time. I want to go back to what we started with. For people who maybe don't truly understand the value of this uniqueness, and they say, well, look, this one did so well, let's just do the same hotel again over in this other city. There's a certain logic to it. You know, it's like these brands who they do line extension. They've got their brand name on like 50 different products, right? But then all of a sudden the brand stops meaning anything when it's, you know, when it's on this and this and this and this. If you had to impress on someone who's saying that maybe they're more financially minded and they're saying, well, it doesn't feel very efficient. We got to get designers all over again. We're going to, you know, like, It's good enough. Why don't we just do this over again in the next place? What would be your business rationale to help them understand, yes, it is more effort. Yes, it is more work. But one of a kind, the value of one of a kind is worth it. How would you make that pitch?
So first of all, it's a totally fair question, Jess, right? It really is a fair question. And of course, there are synergies and cost savings to be had if you replicate what's worked in one place, you replicate it somewhere else. It's just the high-end traveler, the very affluent traveler, doesn't really seem to want that anymore. Even the hard-branded hotels out there, right? Pick Four Seasons, for example, right? They used to look a lot more similar, the early ones, I've been told, and I've seen actually lots of pictures, because they were sort of looking at it that way, right? And now you go into one and then you stay at another and they're completely different, right? They feel unique too. Obviously, there's still a lot of Four Seasons sort of programming that comes through in every location. So there's maybe some similarities there, but it's just a consumer trend that's been so strong that not respecting that in the luxury space, at least, right, is sort of, the data show you that's where the consumer preference is growing very strongly. You see it in other segments too. You even see it in some chains and how they are thinking about their businesses and their stores. Take Barnes & Nobles, for example, right? Used to be totally cookie cutter. Every store looked the same. And that's why I personally actually, many, many years ago, when I first went into one in Miami, when we lived in Miami, I went into Barnes & Nobles. Then I went into another one, looked exactly the same, and I didn't quite like that. So I went to this other bookstore chain, which had three stores, but they all were completely unique and different. So I was already sort of in that mindset many, many years ago. But now Barnes & Nobles actually has just announced that going forward, their design strategy for all of their stores will be different and bespoke by location, right? They won't be doing cookie cutter anymore. If a bookstore chain does that, right, then then obviously in luxury hospitality, you really want to lean into that because that's where the consumer's head is. And there's lots of data to support it. But it is a fair question, of course. You know, it is a fair question. It is more investment in some areas up front, and it is also more work to keep that asset and that hotel unique through the programming, right? Because once you've designed it, that's one thing, and then it's open. But what about the programming, right? Well, the daily events and entertainment that's going on at the property, that also needs to continue to stay fresh and different feeling.
Yeah. Well, I know we've mostly talked about your position with Marriott here, but I want to touch, you know, my love for entrepreneurs. I want to touch on this other brand of yours of helping women not put their super expensive handbags on the floor and the holders. Can you talk to people about this?
Yeah. So this is my wife's company that I co-founded with her many years ago. Basically, we lived in Miami at the time. We traveled through Latin America a lot, and in places like Mexico, Costa Rica, Colombia. Every time you go to not even a great luxury restaurant, any restaurant really, that's sort of decent and has good service, and a lot of the restaurants do down there, somebody will immediately bring these handbag holders to your table. And so it's just incredible how convenient that is and how happy it makes the customer. Such a, you know, very simple gesture, but it solves a real problem. And also in some countries, people are superstitious about leaving their handbag or their purse on the floor because they think the money slips out somehow magically. Anyways, none of the design was very impressive. And so my wife basically partnered with great designers and created a luxury version of that and then started selling them all over the world. And then the pandemic came and that, you know, put a bit of a hold on the business. But yeah, I think it's a great idea. And it was very successful for a long time. And we still have it.
Yeah, that's great. It's such an obvious need. I mean, like, someone would spend more on their purses than I spent on my dirt bike, right?
That's true.
Easily. Like wanting to set it on the floor and have it, you know, let's face it, possibly go missing because without eyes on it, you know, and just like straight not wanting to get anything on it because they spend more than a luxury watch to get it, right?
100%.
What an obvious need and how wise of you to like see it working so well and now bring it elsewhere. I mean, such a great principle. Well, what do you want to leave people with today?
Yeah, just grateful that I was able to spend some time here with you and speak so openly about our wonderful industry. The message to people is, if you go on a trip, make it a good one, right? Be thoughtful about the destination and what you want to do there and pick a great hotel. Make sure it's an amazing hotel because that will be a huge part of the experience.
I love it. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Bye now.